How you doing there, dude?
Not too good, man.
One of those days, huh?
Yeah.
Well, a wiser fellow than myself once said, sometimes you eat the bar and much obliged. Sometimes the bar while he eats you.
That some kind of Eastern thing?
Far from it.
TBTL.
Have you ever bought a panini at a restaurant?
What's a panini?
A panini's a sandwich.
Well, then why did you call it a panini?
Well, panini is Italian, I think.
What's Italian?
That's a country in Europe. It looks like a boot, kind of shaped.
Like a cowboy boot.
If I were you, I wouldn't focus on what he's saying, but more the fact that he's saying something.
Hello, Town Jubilation Committee? Yeah, I got something that's going to make you a lot less jubilant.
I just might have tacos tonight. It's in my Cheerios.
This party is going to be off of the hook.
How could it not be, my friendos? Because it's a Monday afternoon edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Hello, how are you?
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, which is perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. Another beautiful summer day here in Bellingham. And the Pod Dog...
I'll say, what's up, dog?
The Pod Dog had a stressful weekend. She pulled her first double shift as the Bay City lifeguard. I mentioned on previous programs that my wife actually got...
That's my wife.
Actually bought the dog a tank top that says Bay City Lifeguard. This weekend, the dog was wearing the tank top, running around the pool, nervously barking at people / trying to drink the pool water so as, I think, to take the entire water level down. She's a very nervous type. Anyway, the Bay Kitty could...
It's time for cat massage.
Could not have possibly cared less about the goings-ons. So that was our weekend here.
So anyways...
Let's get down to the nitty-gritty here with episode 2409 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
There was a flight heading from Australia to Malaysia, and the airplane started shaking uncontrollably.
I was shaking, my tongue was shaking, my head was shaking, my arms were shaking, and my legs, my feet too.
A couple of things happened. I've seen video of how the flight was shaking. So the behavior of some of the passengers surprised me, and actually the behavior of one of the pilots really surprised me. There was something that the pilot asked everybody to do a couple of different times that just would not have instilled confidence in me were I a passenger on this flight. So we'll talk about Skyjinx Woo. Also, they are now making it illegal in China to sell or buy these tiny toy crossbows that actually shoot toothpicks.
It's literally illegal.
It is now literally illegal. And I really want one. I know it's the worst idea ever. A tiny crossbow that shoots toothpicks that's sold to children. I just... As those words come out of my mouth, I realize what a terrible idea it is. And yet, 9-year-old Luke really wants one of those crossbows real bad. So we'll talk about that. And also, we'll talk about this accidental video that was made in a Fred Meyer electronics department in Bellevue, Washington in the 90s. It was just the demo video camera that was rolling for, like, I think it was maybe 28 minutes or something total. But... looking at these people from the 90s sauntering around an electronics department of a Fred Meyer, there's something about it that's just, it's sort of a, you know.
It's a kind of magic.
It is a kind of magic, so we'll talk about that. Plus, we've got emails and V-mails and lots of other things, including this guy, the Hodor of podcasting. He bought a balloon, but it doesn't mean he thinks he's better than anyone else. I would say primarily he's known for two things. One, being the longest-running co-host of this program, and also...
he may be best known for his depictions of the tall ships, capturing their grace and power, and all those intricate riggings.
Some people are able to really capture the grace. Other people are experts in capturing the power of tall ships. And then you have a third category, which is the riggings. This guy's a triple threat, everybody. He gets all three perfectly when he's drawing his tall ships. He joins us from the studios of Walsh, Walsh, and Doormat in the Wallingford neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. His name is Andrew Walsh. Hello, my dude.
It's the frigging wiggings. That's what gets you. I messed up that joke. That didn't come out right.
Are you okay?
I am. I don't know. I thought I was I was ready to say that.
It's the most mellow I've ever heard you at the start of the show. I'm worried for you.
It seemed like the words just came out funny. You know, the odd thing, the fact that I sound mellow is odd because right as we started the show, I had to stand up for a second to open up my window a little bit. Then I was like, I like this. I'm going to stand for the show. So for during most of your introduction there, I was just wrestling with this mic stand to loosen it up so that I could raise it up to standing position. It's not quite in standing position. I would say if I stand up straight, the mic gets about up to my chest. So I'm actually leaning over my desk right now like some sort of humpback of podcastery trying to do this. So I think I better let's just get back close on show titles. Let's just get back to our normal positions, and maybe tomorrow I'll set up a stand-up rig or something. I just felt it. Like every now and then, do you ever stand up during the show?
Not during our show typically, but I have, in fact, when I'm at Cairo Radio, which I haven't been there in a long time, but back in the day, I used to stand up sometimes, a la one Don O'Neill.
Yeah, it feels good sometimes, right? Yeah.
And then Luke Burbank, what is he, like all of 98 pounds?
I mean, listen to that energy. That's
I know.
That's because a man is standing.
Right. Imagine, I think maybe. Tomorrow might be a bad day because we have a lot of stuff going on tomorrow. Also, you know, we don't have standing desks, so it could impact your ability, I suppose, to play drops and stuff like that. But we should try a standing show someday.
I love
really
it.
And wow, then, the listeners.
We'll try a standing show. Then let's try a hunching show. Then let's try a squatting show. Let's do every different physical position we can be in and see what works the best.
Downward facing podcast. That'll be the next one. Yeah.
Wait, what did you say? Humpback of podcasting?
You mean, what if we said humpback of noter podcasting? It's getting worse.
Of noter. Well, here's the other question. Can you say humpback anymore? I mean, it's first of all,
hunchback. Yeah.
But both of them are probably not the recommended way that you describe anything anymore. So maybe we'll just know what? We got a good hour or so to find something better.
We can also just start this over if you want. Start with I'll just do the intro. Well, sometimes the bar eats you. TBTO. That how it went?
And then I introduce you.
You introduce me and I make a joke about friggin' Riggins. How are
you
doing?
Trying to say that I was pretty good?
I know, I'm say, sorry. Why am I sinking
I came
the
into
show?
The I don't know.
I came
how
into
this
the
happened.
Show pretty good. I don't know, man. I'm sorry. I'm trying.
No, I'm actually
really trying.
I'm feeling pretty good today because my allergies, which were on fleek on Friday, have subsided. And I think, well, I can't decide if it was traditional homeopathic medicine or if it was traditional big pharma medicine that did it. But something has been helping me. And thing one was I went to the store Saturday morning and I got some of this Zizol, which is it's like very powerful 24 hours of allergy relief. Their mascot, if you will, is an owl. And he says the famous line on the commercials, "Be wise all with Zizol," which really makes me mad. I think I've talked about it with you before because that's a really bizarre construction of a sentence. You never say "be wise all."
Right.
They just were trying. It's like Eminem saying "door hinge" to rhyme something with orange.
Ugh.
It's like,
do they do that?
It's not. He did do that.
Oh, Eminem, the rapper. I thought you meant Eminem's commercial. Sorry.
So the frustration for me about them having to do this tortured rhyme of "be wise all" with Zizol is Zizol's a made up name. It's not like this is the Zizol family founded this allergy medicine company in the 1800s and they're just stuck with this kind of tough last name. No, they paid a company a lot of money to invent the word Zizol.
Right. They could have come up with anything. They could have just called it Zize, which would have just solved the problem.
Totally. It's time to rise with Zize.
Or just be
smoke
wise.
Smoke gets in your Zize.
Yeah, right. So when the smoke gets in your Zize.
So that's thing one with Zizol is that I just think that rhyme is kind of dumb. That being said, I did hear it is an effective product. And so I bought it on Saturday morning. I'd say about 9 in the morning. I went down to this kind of weird pharmacy in our neighborhood. That is like not part of a big chain. In fact, it's one of the last. I worked at a small like, you know, kind of mom and pop pharmacy as a kid called Cregan's Pharmacy in Seattle. Now, that location is something called the Purple Store. All they sell is stuff that is purple. Mm-hmm. No relation to the Cregan's Pharmacy that was there years ago, but in the same building. But here we have, like, you know, we have your normal distribution of, like, your CVS's and your Walgreens and your pharmacies that are in the grocery stores and all of that. But then we have, like, a what looks like it's just a little mom and pop pharmacy. And I always want to go there to support, you know, local business and stuff, brick and mortar and all that. But I feel like they often don't have what I need. And the place is also kind of depressing because it's just people just go there when they're having a real bad time physically. Like, all they sell are basically, like, knee braces, adult diapers, and then there's just a line of people waiting to get their Zyzol or whatever, whatever prescription they're getting.
Just a, like, line of owls out the door.
It is, and it's not really their fault, but it going to this store depresses me. It's like, because all it is a reminder that we're all getting physically older and more decrepit by the hour. So I went down to this place. I got the Zyzol in the car. I popped the Zyzol in to my mouth. I swallow it. I'm all excited. And then I actually read the directions and it says, take Zyzol at night.
Oh.
They said, we know it's weird that we're suggesting that you take an allergy medicine at night. That's not normally how you do it. But we do that because it helps you sleep. Read, I think it has sleeping powder in it. So it's like it knocks you out at night and then you sleep and your allergies supposedly go down. And then by the next day, you still have so much Zyzol coursing through your veins that you're fine. Well, I had taken the sleeping pill at 9 a.m.
Oh, goodness. And this is, Saturday or Sunday?
Saturday.
This is Saturday. Okay, so what happened?
Well, I was a little sleepy and spacey during the day. I tried to counteract it by drinking a lot of vodka at the pool
so that
I couldn't tell if it was the Zyzol or the alcohol. Be Wyzol and medicate with alcohol, I think is their new catchphrase they should have.
Yeah. Oh, man. Dr. Burbank is in the house.
So I was a little foggy on Saturday, but I'm not exactly sure what was behind that. But my allergies did feel a little better. And then the next day, I was hanging out with my wife's family, and we ended up over at some folks' house. I've always thought of them as being my wife's aunt and uncle, but I think they might technically be cousins, but they're a little older than her. This is not super important, but I just want to kind of I want to know what category I put Nick and Patty in my mind. That's
right.
All.
No, I mean, you've heard me mention my weird Uncle Steve a lot. I think he was technically my second cousin or something.
Technically your brother you guys didn't talk about.
Yeah, he lives in the attic. Weird.
So we're over at their house, and I'm complaining about my allergies, and Patty says to me, oh, I have terrible allergies too. Check this out. And she says, I got a honeycomb. She got a honeycomb from her daughter, Brooke, who I will mention is a faithful TBTL listener. And they have a little coffee stand out in the Skagit Valley. And a lot of, like, farmers and people that work in agriculture and have do beekeeping and all this stuff, they all come through. So they sell a lot of, like, local stuff, really good locally sourced stuff from the Skagit Valley, including these full-on honeycombs that you're supposed to eat them to fix your allergies. And Patty said, I've been eating this honeycomb and it has totally helped me because it has the local pollen and other stuff in it that is similar to whatever it is that's giving you a hard time. So she breaks me off a big old piece of honeycomb yesterday. And she said, you got to eat it all, including the wax. So I'm chewing on it. The first part was very enjoyable because it was honey. It was delicious. The second part was tougher because I ended up with a giant wad of wax in my mouth, like a chewing gum size blob of wax, which I proceeded to chew for the next hour and a half trying to get up the nerve to swallow it. Mm-hmm. My body was like, nope, this is not a thing we swallow. And I was like, yes, it is. And it was like, nope. So I just kept chewing on it and chewing on it and chewing on it until finally I was able to swallow it down. But I don't know if it was the Zyzol or the honeycomb, but I'm feeling pretty good today.
Take that body telling me what I can swallow and what I can't. Tell me more about the process of eating, because you kind of said part one and part two, which is not how I was picturing it. I was picturing a almost cartoonish honeycomb where it's almost like a flat kind of piece of cake, and it's all the same kind of material, whatever is the structure of the honeycomb with, I assumed, a mixture of wax and honey inside the crevices. But clearly, yes, I'm wrong about it. No, because you said that the first, how was the first part better than the second? It sounds like you were able to like kind of separate out the
parts. When you chew on something like that, the honey is immediately squeezed out of the honeycomb.
Oh, in your mouth.
So the first, yeah, imagine like a, remember those, that gum that was like called like Gushers?
Yes, I do.
God, that was the greatest.
That's pretty good.
I mean, the problem was that they were sort of short-lived. Mm-hmm. Like you got a big gush of grape flavor and you were like, this is never going to end. Yeah. And then 2 seconds later, you were like, this gum's terrible.
Yeah, yeah. No,
I ate all of the juice out of it.
It's like, it's perfect metaphor for any relationship.
I consider myself the cherry gusher of husbands. So anyway, when I first chewed on it, the honey came out and that tasted good. But then very shortly after, I was left with just a giant chunk of honeycomb. And what I had to really try to force myself to not think about was the fact that, I mean, let's be honest, it could be the honey itself is part of this, but the honeycomb especially is, it's basically bee dookie.
Well, it's not, well, I don't know much about
it. I mean, how do they make it?
I don't think it's dookie, right? It's not, I mean, it's not their waste.
Where do you think it comes from?
It's their digestive waste.
Is it, do they throw it up or do they crap it out? I don't actually know.
I don't know.
I'm Sean on the line. He's a
beekeeper. But also my neighbor, man. Let's just get Kevin over. I could probably lean out the window right now and yell, hey, Kevin, get over. He was at our party on Saturday night. He was wearing a shirt that said, got my mind on my honey and my honey on my mind.
That's a pretty good spoof.
I love that guy. How do bees make
honey? Well, that's a pretty good spoof.
Let's see here. It says they buy it at Whole Foods.
Yeah.
It says they go to Thrive Market. let's see here. They collect sugary juice called nectar from the blossom by sucking it out with their tongues. So it is going in their digestive. Then they store it in their honey stomach, which is different than their food stomach. Does that make you feel better?
Mildly. I like that a term called honey stomach exists.
Is that a term of endearment? Come here, honey stomach. Who's my honey stomach? When they have a full load, they fly back to the hive. There they pass it on through their mouths onto other worker bees, who then chew on it for about a half an hour. You were just like a little worker bee chewing on this stuff.
Sure.
It's then passed absolutely from bee to bee. It's like a wad of gum at a seventh grade dance.
Yeah.
I don't know.
ABC. Would you like some ABC gum?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on at those dances. Until gradually it turns into honey, then the bees store it in honeycomb cells. So it doesn't say how they eventually, they're just passing it mouth to mouth.
So it never goes through their bee bunghole, which is great news.
It is, especially now that I'm picturing this like in the Pixar movie. Bees. I'm glad we don't have to see that process. They have a special thing called a honey stomach, which I'm so charmed by that.
I like that a lot. And that's a great relief to me. I don't know why it matters that it's only been in their mouth and honey stomach and then back out of their mouth. There's something about them excreting it from the other, you know, the southbound end of a northbound bee. It's not like I don't eat it, but right, I just don't like to think about it. And as the honeycomb was in my mouth and I was chewing it, I was thinking to myself, am I just eating bee number two? But I'm not. I'm eating bee throw up, and I am fine with that. I couldn't be more okay with that, and I'm feeling better. So
that is
thanks,
good,
Patty.
I don't want to bog you down in details here, but I am curious about the amount. I was just to start off the conversation, I was picturing you having maybe a square about the size of an average piece of bread.
No, not that big at all. Way smaller than that. Imagine a section of honeycomb the size of two of the triangles you would get for successfully winning a category of Trivial Pursuit.
So two of those.
How's that for specificity?
You could have said about the size of a piece of Gusher gum, because that's around the same size, right? Maybe even a little bit less than that.
Mm-hmm.
So you're chewing around just like this little, like you almost kind of have this wax gum for a while. I'm into this. I kind of want to try it. Can you do it if you don't struggle with allergies?
No. It will give you allergies if you don't
have allergies. Dang it. Yeah. All right. I guess got to go back to eating bee poop then.
How was your party this weekend? I forgot. You guys had a big, You guys had a big get-together, which I know is fun, but also can be a little anxious-making.
Yeah, it actually ended up going really well. I guess the one problem was the grill situation. I feel like in the past... All right, let me just tell you how I prep for a party, okay?
Okay.
First, I go in the bathroom. I look in the mirror for a half hour, and I say, you got this. You got this. You got this. Then I cry for a little bit. Then I repeat that process three times, all the way through. You have to complete all the way through. Otherwise, yeah. You're going to mess
and
things
up.
And
if you get interrupted, you have to start over.
Yes, exactly. And then I start summoning ghosts by saying, Mary, Mary, quite contrary. I don't know how you summon ghosts in a mirror. What is that?
Mary.
Oh, Bloody Mary, right. Anyway, I do most of the cooking. Several people noticed that I was calling this Genevieve's party, and they called me out on it. And they said, why is this Genevieve's party? Which is probably rude of me as a equal partner in this relationship. But the fact of the matter is, I like to give myself a little distance from these things because I really, you know, I wouldn't be throwing this party. You know, if I lived here by myself, like there's no way that I would throw a party like this. This is Genevieve likes doing it. Now, do I hate it? Absolutely not. But I consider it Genevieve's party. Having said all of that, I will say that I do a big chunk of the labor. I make my famous, very famous corn and black bean salad. I make a pasta salad. I make a fruit salad. And then I'm also in charge of the grill. So Genevieve buys a bunch of hot dogs and frozen hamburgers and stuff, and I prep that. The key is sprinkling some cumin on the frozen burgers, by the way. And then I kind of prep everything, and I take it down to the grill. And I thought,
I'm surprised
I was
you go with frozen
shape.
Burgers. Surprised you don't go hand form.
Well, I tried to talk Genevieve into that, and she's. But I mean, there were probably about 50 people here or something. It just becomes
that's
like,
a lot.
Yeah,
that's
it just becomes a lot of work. Yeah, yeah,
totally. That makes sense.
Yeah, and so I felt like in the past I did this process, and then of course I want to get the grilling going usually right away. Just so that once the grilling's done, then I can kind of relax and enjoy myself. And I did miscalculate a little bit this time. It took the, you know, I grill with charcoal. God, this is boring. I grill with charcoal, and you have to kind of start it in this chimney thing, which usually when I'm cooking with less charcoal, it only takes like 10 or 15 minutes to get going. But because I was using so much charcoal, I didn't realize it took almost like, I think at least a half hour, 45 minutes just to get the coals even hot before I started grilling it. And these were these kind of thicker burgers, so they took some time. Here's what I'm getting at with this. I am used to saying a party starts at, like, let's say 6 o'clock in this case, and then people start arriving around, you know 6:37. Nobody wants to be the first person there. But we're getting...
Oh, I know some people who do, and God bless them. But I wish they would stop.
Well, I don't mind, and I don't want to. I mean, there are probably people listening who came to the party, and I don't want to make them feel bad. Nobody did anything wrong, but I just kind of miscalculated. And what I miscalculated, this is the broader point here, is I'm 40 years old now. I don't have kids, but a big chunk of the people who come to these parties do have kids, and I'm not used to this idea that, like, if you say you're going to a barbecue, I'm just used to going to adult barbecues, and the food's ready when the food's ready, and, you know, everybody's chilling. But when there's a bunch of kids involved, they have probably been planning all day. Like, the parents, like, kids eat at a certain time, right? So they're like, okay, well, we're going to this barbecue.
If they're spoiled.
So they're probably, like, planning it. So it took a long time for the food, for the grill to get ready. And so people are just kind of like, I just see all these really sad, anxious-looking kids kind of milling about, like, eating pasta salad while they're just, like... And then at one point, it became almost like... a Dickens novel or something. Like, there was like three kids with their plates, like paper plates, just like standing around the grill looking at me beseechingly as I'm like trying to get the burgers done. But the thing is, I don't want to give them burgers too early. Like, I like a little, you know, I don't mind a little red bloody juice in my burger, but I'll be damned if I'm going to have a kid look up at me with like blood pouring out of his mouth and crying. Yeah. Why did this man do this to me?
I can't think of any scenario where that's a sign things have gone well.
Exactly. So I'm trying to make sure that these burgers are done.
You're
in
like,
a way
not
that
again.
Are
we did this at Christmas. This is not going to be another Walsh has get together where there's a child with blood coming out of their mouth.
It seems like so little to ask. yet somehow I can't get over that hurdle. But I did get over that hurdle this time. But I did feel kind of bad, and I guess it also just kind of got me thinking about, like, yeah, how life kind of changes when kids are involved. I'm sure a bunch of people were probably somewhat disappointed that they couldn't, like, feed their kids when they got there, because they were all just kind of standing around looking at me while I, you know, did round after round of meat. I don't have a big gas grill, too. That's the thing. I have this little grill, and so I love grilling, and I love that part. But this time, I felt a little bit bad and a little anxious about the fact that people, this wasn't just like kind of party food and people having a good time. This was like young ones' dinner, if you know what I mean.
Well, I think it's interesting because I get the sense that probably you like being in charge of the grill for a couple of reasons. One, you know, you enjoy the task of cooking the meetup, but also mm-hmm. it gives you something to do that's not straight up pure unadulterated socializing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're socializing, but you have a focus for your attention, which is the grill. So if a conversation starts to lag at any point, you'd be like, oh, I better get back to the grill. Or if, like, you just have something, you have a reason for existing.
Luke, sometimes you make statements about me and I think, boy, am I really giving that off? That's not how I feel. But sometimes, my friend, you nail it. And
so
you
that's part of
just
it.
Nailed it. And I'll say, if I can interject for 1 second, I don't know why this detail is important, but this was the kind of, aside from feeling a little bit behind, is the expression behind the eight ball? Is that bad? Uh-huh. I was behind the eight ball a little bit as far as the clock
unless
is concerned.
Unless you're at Studio 57 in the 80s with Mick Jagger, then being behind the eight ball means you're going to have a hell of a time.
Studio 54. Right?
That's the one.
Studio 54.
Oh, you didn't know about Studio 57?
Oh, no, that was the yeah. You were at Studio 54. We were at Studio 57.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Okay.
Anyway, you know what was perfect for me? Because I do like that role. I like grilling. I actually enjoy the process of it. And also, you're right. I like to have something to do while I'm talking to people. I like to, yeah, not feel like I'm just milling about making small talk. But I'm also... And now I know this is one thing you don't know about me, but I'm also kind of an insecure guy. And that manifests itself in my grilling as well, because, like I mentioned, like, oh, I think these are done. I don't want to dry the hell out of them, but I also don't want to be handing out bloody burgers. I'm used to cooking for Veeves and I. We like our things our way. But anyway, a lot of anxiety. But my buddy Mike, who I think you met briefly, he lives above me here.
Mm-hmm.
He was the perfect grill companion. Like, he was able to just kind of chill with me the whole time. You know how sometimes you're grilling and there's like some... usually guys who will kind of congregate around and be like, oh, I'm going to do it that way, huh? All right, you know, you could do it that way. If you, I mean, it's your grill. And it becomes like almost this kind of uncomfortable ego thing. This,
yes, yeah, there's a certain amount of machismo
like
there.
Ugh, hate that so much. But then you have your Mikes of the world, who's just a steady presence. Also, Mike, I think I'm allowed to say this, Mike used to help run a restaurant. And that he still is, I think he is a co-owner of a restaurant on the East Coast. So he's kind of got this, he's got this restaurant background too. So he's kind of like, he's telling me exactly when their burgers are done. And I trust his knowledge, but also if he's wrong, I can just point to him and be like, talk to Mike, man. Yep. I don't know. I was doing it my way. No, it was just really great. I felt very supported, and it was like all the best of all worlds.
I have the least barbecuing game of any person who is the age of 41 and lives in a developed country and has been the owner of a barbecue for 20 or more years. Like, I am a disaster. And the more that I, the more that I doubt myself, the more that I create reason to doubt myself. Like, we had Carrie's family over, I don't know, like last summer, and I was making steaks for everybody. And I was like, I thought I had cooked them like – I was they like things to be pretty cooked, and I thought I had erred on the side of like really cooked, and they were like so raw, so undercooked. And everybody was trying to be – they were extremely polite people, but everybody was trying to just like be polite about it. But then I'm doing that weird thing where I'm like, I can throw it back on. It's no big deal. I'll throw it back on. No, we're fine. Give me the motherfucking steak. I'm throwing it back on.
You're like,
it just like it's.
You each have an end in your mouth, and you're fighting
right?
over it like dogs.
Seriously, because it's like they don't want to seem ungrateful, but I don't want them to have to eat something that's not cooked to their liking, and then like my brother-in-law's like, well, I could just butterfly these because they were really thick.
Oh, yeah.
So he,
oh, interesting.
And of course, I was like, no, you don't have to do that. And then he did that and it was way better. And
yeah.
I was like,
oh, interesting.
Great. But then, like, we had a different get together last summer and our friend Jake was over and he's one of those guys who he's not a jerk about it, but he knows how to use the barbecue and he's watching me mm-hmm. cooking whatever I'm cooking. He goes, do you have any idea what you're doing? And I was like, not really.
But he said it in a way that didn't, how did you feel about that?
I felt fine about it because, good. Because I'm somebody who tends to front a lot. And I think mm-hmm. you're somebody who tends to kind of, this is your own description, sort of roll over and expose your belly when in doubt.
Sure, yeah.
As a way of just like de-escalating situations. You're like, I know that I'm the worst at this. So you don't have to tell me I'm the worst at it. Cause I know
I was doing
whether
that
or not you
grill.
Are.
Yeah, no, I was showing it. Well, that's the thing. I was grilling shirtless too.
Yeah,
for that reason.
That's how you got all those grease burns, Andrew. Those are permanent, dude. So, for whatever reason, I'm a kind of an insecure guy, which manifests at me sometimes trying to act like I know shit that I don't know. Mm-hmm. When it comes to barbecuing, I'm pretty much just like a 4-year-old child could walk up to me and be like, you only should flip that once. And I would say, God, you're so right. You're absolutely 100% right.
You got Tegan. Little hands. You got little yeah. hands. Try flipping yeah. that over for me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So I for whatever reason, I have no ego about that. And anyone can give me advice or criticism at any time. And for whatever bizarre reason, that doesn't seem to hurt my feelings.
That's good.
Now, this has oddly made me hungry for doing some barbecuing tonight up here at Old Burbank Springs.
Well, I will tell you this, and it sounds like I'm being a real complainer. I swear, it was a fun party, and I'm not trying to overemphasize the work I did. I'm happy to do it. But the one mistake I did make, so the whole grilling, I was surprised. When it was all done, I realized, wow, I started this process a little before 6. Didn't get done grilling until like 8:30. I know it was 8:30. So I was like, okay, spent the first 2.5 hours at the grill, which again is good. It's a good way to ease me into this social situation. But what I never count on is the fact that none of the food that I made is going to be left by the time the last person gets the last burger, right? So at the end, now I'm not super hungry because I've been over a grill, but later on that night when it gets to be 11 o'clock at night, midnight, I had a couple of beers during the party. I'm afraid to say. And then the hunger started to get me. And I was like, I didn't have any of that food I made. And I think in the future, what I'm going to do is I'm going to have to hide me some secret sausages. I was telling mm-hmm. Beavs about that. I think like I'm going to have to like kind of wrap up a couple of sausages in the tin foil. I'm going to maybe Mike, if we do this again, or another confidant can shuttle those off to a secret secure location for me so that later on in the evening, maybe even, you know, put aside some pasta.
You just need a pneumatic tube system.
Oh God. They're where the perfect shape.
Yeah. You put anything you want to have later, you put it in the tube. It gets Hudsucker proxied over to a different part of Walsh and doormat where nobody knows about it, and then you just go get it later.
Did you have that when you were a kid? You'd go to the drive-thru at the bank pre-ATM, and they had those pneumatic tubes, and then at the end of the whatever the transaction your parents were doing, they would put a sausage in the tube for the kid.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a Seattle tradition.
Yeah, no, we did it in Ohio, too.
It's very greasy on the paperwork, so you have to send it as the absolute last thing
yep.
because you will destroy all of the documents about the deposit or the withdrawal. But it's a nice, it's a fun little thing on a Saturday. Mommy, can we go to the bank and can I have some sausages?
Daddy, would you like a bank sausage?
Can I tell you that, like, I have a... I'm sure I've told this story before, but when I lived in LA, my ex and I had a huge get together. I mean, just, I don't know what, it felt like it was 300 people. It was probably like 100 people. Our house was really small. The place was totally packed. I was barbecuing up a storm and it was just it was a raging party. And finally it was 3 a.m. and everybody had left and I was sitting on the kitchen floor by myself and I realized, like you mentioned the other night, I realized I hadn't eaten any food the whole night because mm-hmm. I was trying to host the party.
Yeah.
And I was lucky in that a hot dog had fallen on the floor at some point. So I brushed that off and I'm sitting on the floor and I'm eating this floor hot dog and I hear voices and I see like, my memory of it is, it's almost like there was like flashlights going, but it might've just been voices. And it's like 2 or 3 people trying to come up the stairs to go to the party.
Oh, it hadn't. Three in the morning. It was just beginning.
They were like, well, no, the party was long right, over. But these were like friends. These were like friends of friends of friends. Someone had gotten the word. This was some like, you know, this was like a Project X or something. Like they were like, oh, there's a party over on Clinton Street in Echo Park. We're going. They're rolling up fashionably late at 3 a.m. Mm. I also seem to remember I was shirtless at this point. I'm shirtless on the floor of my own kitchen eating a floor hot dog, hiding from these people trying to come to my house for a party.
We got to put a parental warning on this episode. It's getting steamy with this word image you're painting.
All I needed to do, by the way, was just stand up like a man, walk over to my front door of my house that I owned, and open the door and say, oh, hey, yeah, you know what? The party's over, but have a great night. That's all I needed to do. But instead, I chose to cower under the table in the kitchen and hope that they went away as I ate the rest of the hot dog. And it worked. They did go away eventually.
That's drunk brain. That's your brain on drunks.
You think?
Yeah.
This is your brain. This is your brain on drunks. Hey, we have a few more people still that we need to thank who donated to last year's TBTL-a-thon. That's right. We had some people who made donations, and in all of our thanking of the different donors, we managed to overlook a few names, and we want to make good on that right now. We also want to say that
I'm sorry.
We feel very bad, but we hope that in the bizarre world of TBTL, Andrew, sometimes, like if you have a really terrible song played as the music for your thank you, mm-hmm. or even if you were forgotten, so now you're part of this other weird special class of people who are being thanked 1.5 years later. Hopefully it will feel special and different to these people, because these people were very generous and they helped us do the show TBTL, the very one you're listening to. And so we owe them a big thanks. And we're speaking, of course, of Mike Mead of Redmond, Washington, Madeline Kanai of Chandler, Arizona. Did we drive through Chandler, Arizona?
That doesn't ring a bell, but I'm going to look up where that is.
Elaine Luke of Maple Valley, Washington. And Michelle T. McNelly of River Falls, Wisconsin. River Falls, Wisconsin sounds like a beautiful place.
It does. It sounds.
I hope it's not just like a giant Best Buy. I hope it's not like just a massive exurban mall. Because when I see the words River Falls, Wisconsin, it just sounds bucolic and beautiful. And like there's some falls and they go into a river. And it's in Wisconsin.
River Falls,
Wisconsin.
Where'd you come up with that? I was a little distracted because I did just want to get back to you on Chandler. We did not go through Chandler. It's a bit south. We cut across Arizona, like on the northern tip of Arizona, as we went from Las Vegas to Albuquerque, New Mexico. So all right, I don't know if that's interesting or not.
It is to me, and probably to Madeline. She may not have known where Chandler, Arizona was.
She might not have. And I will say, like, and I just hope that in the same way, you know, you're thinking about River Falls, I think the same way about Chandler. I hope it's just a beautiful place with a lot of people named Chandler.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Mike, Madeline, Elaine, and Michelle, thank you so much for supporting TBTL. We really, really appreciate it. And we could not do this program without your help. So thank you. And sorry we screwed the thing up.
Love was blind, and I was too blind to see. Sorry.
Hello, and welcome to Top Story.
Our top story, we've got some sky jinx.
Good afternoon, this is your captain speaking.
The captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign.
Flight 209er, clear for vector 324.
We have clearance, Clarence.
Roger, roger. What's our vector, Victor?
Oh, it's a big, pretty white plane with red stripes, curtains in the window, and wheels, and it looks like a big Tylenol. Sky jinx.
An air Asia flight from Perth, Australia to Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. I had some technical problems yesterday. The plane started to wobble and vibrate for over an hour, and the pilot was forced to turn the plane around. I believe they went back to Perth. It was definitely a scary situation. Somebody was recording the sights and sounds of it on their phone. I'm going to play this for you, Andrew. This is just the sound on this airplane of everything shaking.
Oh,
Those are all of the like tray tables and everything on the plane just violently vibrating. Now, one thing that's interesting to me is that in this video, one of the people up ahead gets up to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, what's up with that?
That's an extremely calm reaction to this situation, if you ask me.
Or that person is freaking out and is going to be sick.
Yes, I guess that's also a possibility.
But she seems calm. I saw that
pretty
too.
Calm.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like people's ability to get up and use the restroom on a plane at what seems to be an inopportune time knows almost no bounds in my experience. Like, more than once, I've been on a plane where the plane lands. I'm talking about the wheels come in contact with the ground, and we're still going pretty fast, and we're nowhere near the gate. And someone just comes strolling up the aisle, like, time to go to the bathroom. And, I mean, boy, you want to get on the wrong side of the flight crew. That is like a cardinal sin. They will shut that down immediately.
Yeah.
There's also the move of like the plane is mid taking off and you just see some guy walking past you uphill in the plane, like the yodeler on The Price is Right, just heading towards the bathroom. I'm like, do you realize that this plane has barely left the ground? Again, that's a good way to get yelled at over the intercom.
And nobody likes to be hollered at. Couple of things on this. First of all, on the flights that I'm on, Luke, you will not be surprised to hear that I do not let anybody go to the bathroom because I don't want to be cleaning out the tanks at the end of the trip. And it just seems easier to me if everybody can just keep it in. Secondly, I just going back to this mystery woman who does get up. I think you said this, but it's worth underscoring that this rattling went on for an hour. Right? I have that right, right? A full hour. So, and think about it, those minutes, every minute that passes during this must feel like 5 minutes. So you hit the 45 minute mark, you must feel like this rattling's been going on for hours and you still don't know if you're going to live or die. At a certain point, you're just going to get up and use the restroom.
Right. It becomes, you become inured to the whole experience a little bit, I guess.
Yeah. And maybe also you maybe just would feel better with a little change of scenery. No kidding. Like, do you, like, I'm not saying that as a joke, but like, I'm a nervous flyer. I don't know if we'll just delve into my reaction to the story right away, but like, this shit's getting to me, man. I told you on the show a couple of weeks ago that I'm becoming more and more of a nervous flyer. And I'm just like reading the story and I'm watching this video and it's like, it's really getting to me. Like, I know that this video is going to be in my head probably forever, and it's on airplanes now I'm often visualizing the worst, and I really hate to say that, and I hope I'm not freaking out other people, but like, I'm not white knuckling it during entire flights, but certainly during takeoffs and landings, and anytime I kind of let my mind wander, I think about scenes in movies where bad things happen to airplanes and stuff like that, and it's just kind of getting in my head. And this is the type of thing that would, if this happened to me on a flight, I don't think I would ever fly again.
This is obviously getting into rank speculation because you weren't on the plane. But if you had been on the plane and it was shaking like that, and then the pilot came on, not once, but twice, and apparently asked over the loudspeaker if everybody on the plane could pray, would you feel better or worse about your chances? Because that is exactly what happened on this flight. The pilot came on the intercom and asked everybody on the flight to pray
twice.
Two times.
Not good. That's a bad call. And I think I don't know what the culture of this, you know, this is not an American airline that I'm familiar with. So I don't know what the culture at that airline is. It seems, though, that if that was one of the more traditional American
airlines. It's MC Hammer Air. We've got to pray just to make it today.
Oh, okay. Oh, and it's too legit to make an emergency landing. It was one of my favorite jams.
Yeah.
If I heard that, I was thinking about that today. Like, if this started happening anyway and the pilot was just what I would expect the pilot to do, to say it's a small mechanical malfunction, we're turning the plane around, we're going to make it, just, you know, everybody try to stay calm, take deep breaths or whatever. Like, I could imagine hearing that. If the pilot started saying, you know, everybody say a silent prayer or a not silent prayer, I think I would probably get emotional. Like, I think that if the pilot was saying the normal things I'd expect, I would probably kind of do some very deliberate breathing. I'm sure I would be clutching my seat or the seat in front of me for the whole time. I'm sure I'd be embarrassing Genevieve if she were there. That's the other thing, too. Like, my reaction to this would be very different, I think, if I was there with Vives. Well, maybe my reaction wouldn't be, but my emotions about it would be different if I was flying with her by myself. But if the pilot started saying things like pray, that to me is a signal that, like, this is out of his hands, and I assume it's a him, and out of the airplane's hands, and like now the worst is probably upon us. I would probably start freaking out. Like, I'd probably silently start crying.
I'm not trying to. Yeah, I know that we have many people of faith who listen to the show, and I'm sure have people who believe very strongly that there's a real world relationship between praying for things and things actually happening. And I certainly grew up in that world, and I grew up praying very hard for various things as a kid. I'm not personally of the opinion that that's something that really can control and shape our sort of physical world. That's not my personal belief system. But not to get too into, like, I don't know, the power of prayer or not, but even if you're the pilot and even if you think prayer might work, I think you have a responsibility to not ask everyone to pray, because you are going to scare the shit out of the non-prayers on the plane. And I think if God is big enough to fix the plane's problems through prayer, he's big enough to do it off of your prayer. Like, as the pilot, you say a prayer, talk to the man upstairs, ask him to work it out, but ask him to do it in such a way that you don't have to terrify everybody on the plane. I don't think that 190 people on the plane praying is going to sway the Lord more than the pilot praying. I think it'll be fine if just the pilot does it.
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't approach the story or think about it in the context of the fact that I don't believe in God, and some people do and some people don't. I just think that even if everybody on the plane, including me, truly did believe in the power of prayer, I still think, well, see, maybe that's my problem. I can't disassociate myself with the fact that I don't believe that that actually works, because I was going to say, even if I totally believed in that, you're still just freaking everybody out. It is your telling everybody to pray is obviously the very last arrow you have in your quiver. So even if you are a prayer, like, it's just sending the signal that, like, this is the end, my friend.
Yes, I know. I mean, it really is. That's the absolute court of last resort. That's sort of like saying, okay, everyone, flap your arms. You know? Like, because the wings have fallen off, and maybe we can create enough updraft just through, like, that is the Hail Mary. I mean, it's ironic I would use the term Hail Mary, but I mean, that is the ultimate Hail Mary.
Right.
To just be like, all right, so I'll start praying, guys.
Everybody hold your breath and move to the left side of the plane so that we can just kind of get this thing back.
Right
in
before
balance.
The plane hits the ground, I need everybody to jump.
Yeah, right.
I'm gonna yell, exactly. Jump. Everybody jump right before you hit the ground. We'll be fine.
And also, if you want to have some real fun, put a penny on your knee.
Those guys, the pilot got a round of applause when they got back to Perth, though. So I guess the passengers on this flight, well, they were, I'm sure, extremely relieved to be back on terra firma. And I guess they were if they were in any way extra stressed out by that request for prayer, I guess they decided to let that slide because they were just so happy to be alive.
Yeah, I'm sure I would feel the same way. The person who wrote this Jalopnik article was surprised that one of the people who was interviewed was kind of so happy with the pilot and the pilot's ability to land the plane in the end. And it sounded like the writer was, I don't think that would be my reaction. I think that I would just really be upset at this pilot for scaring me so much. But I think you live through something like that. This would have, I guess I've already said this, this would just have such a profound impact on the rest of my life. I mean, I know I would never fly again. Like, watching this video has freaked me out. I don't know if you can tell. I know that you think I'm being real extra lately. What with the toad,
extra Andy?
The toad drink and this, but I promise you I'm not, exaggerating this just to impress you or make you be my friend. This really bothers me.
Really? Well, I'm sorry then if I suggested a story.
No. It's not into
an anxious state of mind. No. How about a story that you'll find relaxing and soothing, like 28 minutes, or I should say 26 minutes, of people in the electronics section of a Fred Meyer. For people that don't live in the Northwest, Fred Meyer is a, I guess you could call it a department store. It's along the lines of, imagine a Walmart, but a local Walmart that's been around, a regional Walmart that's been around for a really long time. I guess the reason I hesitate to call it a department store is when I think of department store, I think of like a JCPenney, something that's mostly clothes focused. And Fred Meyer's, you know, they have groceries, they have snow chains, they have some clothing, and they have an electronics department, which I grew up not far from the Fred Meyer that was located in the Greenwood neighborhood of Seattle. And I have the strongest sense memory. Everything goes back to hot dogs this episode, Andrew. Yeah. There was a little, like, you know, when you walked into through the first set of sliding doors to get into the little, a lobby area, if you will, where they have like a little mechanical horse you put a quarter in and ride on it and some shopping carts and stuff. But it's enclosed. When you would get in there, to the right was a stand that sold snacks and hot dogs. Mm-hmm. And it was the most, like, the best smell of hot dog you could ever smell. Mm. I remember, like, Saturdays being at that Fred Meyer and just being like, this is the greatest smell of all time. Mm-hmm. But just beyond that was the electronics department, where you would hang out for hours as a kid, like just looking at stuff and wandering around. We had nothing else interesting going on in our life, so we would hang out in the electronics department of Fred Meyer all the time. This woman named Kelly Rogers was looking through some old videotapes that she was going to take. They were like in her family, and she was going to take these tapes to Costco and have them turned into DVDs. And when they did get turned into DVDs, she watched one of them and she found this scene that first she was a little confused by, but she finally figured out what had happened was her dad bought this camera from Fred Meyer, and it had been the display model. So it was the one that was sitting there. I assume it was plugged into a TV, because the looks that people give, they understand that they're being videotaped or that they're being projected onto this TV in some way. Mm-hmm. Like if it was just a camera sitting there on a shelf, I don't think they would have taken note of it, but they're looking over at something that's a little out of, just to the side of the camera. Anyway, it was recording, and when her dad bought the video camera, he got this tape with it and never deleted it. And so it's just this weird time capsule. I watched it today for the second time, Andrew.
Do you watch it all the way through?
Yes.
This article, this was posted in the Willamette Week. Did you already say mm-hmm. that?
Nope.
But they kind of point out some of the time stamps where things happen. If I'm going to read here directly, key moments in the video include 5 minutes and 29 seconds in, where a kid wearing an acid wash jean jacket blows a giant bubble gum bubble. There's an amazing jacket that we see at 8 minutes and 35 seconds in. There's a man holding a balloon at 15 minutes, 12 seconds, and it goes on from there, including an argument about whether or not a radio includes a cassette player at 14:47. So I kind of went through and I kind of watched those highlights, as pointed out by Willamette Week. And I'm looking forward to a time that I can just watch the whole thing. I'm obsessed with stuff like this. And I don't want to bore you with stories I've already told you, but this reminds me of my realization in college that as I was kind of getting into audio and stuff and I was playing around with, I always had a dictaphone on me, like in high school and college. I'd record my friends, you know, just being silly. And I saved those tapes, but I realized at one point probably the most valuable tapes I have are these answering machine tapes, where people like my grandma and my dad are just like leaving me just like mundane messages. And then some of my friends who are leaving me very creative messages. Back in the day when people actually left messages on physical tapes, sometimes when you had goofy friends in college, they would leave long, involved, silly messages and stuff like that. So I just started, instead of deleting and taping over those tapes, I just started saving them in a bag and meticulously labeling them, and I've never gone back and listened, but to me, those are real snapshots of time, right? People know they're being recorded, but for the most part, it's just mundane life stuff that I know, you know, it's already been, how long have I been out of college? 15, I graduated in 2000, yeah, so over 15 years. I know someday I'll go back and listen to those tapes, and it'll be like a time machine, better than anything else I can imagine. I also had something similar with a video tape that I kind of found when I was in high school that I'd kind of accidentally recorded a chunk of my basement when I was like, I don't know, maybe 12 years old and monkeying around with my dad's video camera. And it was this unexpected snapshot on this kind of, I don't know, this unfinished basement that was like a playroom for me. It was kind of my club growing up, not not club where I played music and DJed for other kids.
It wasn't Duh Club.
No, it wasn't Duh Club. It was my club. And anyway, and so I that was only like 45 seconds, maybe 90 seconds of tape that I found as a young man from my youth that was just accidental. And it just, seeing a place that I was so familiar with, it made me want to document places I live more. Now when I leave an apartment, I try to remember to take a quick video with my phone, just kind of a quick video tour, so that like I'll go back someday and look around and be like, oh, I forgot we had that shelf there. I find this stuff fascinating.
You know, it's almost like an encouragement to become not sort of a hoarder, but like for all of the talk of late, and we had these guys on Livewire, I don't know, a couple months ago, they had this blog, The Minimalists. And I mean, their thing, in I guess in their defense, if you will, and in defense of a lot of people who are Marie Kondo, people that are real minimalists, is like, well, if something's meaningful to you, have it. Just make sure the stuff you have has meaning. But in this world of trying to sort of, a lot of people anyway, really value the idea of not having so much stuff in your life, of not accumulating crap or old, you know, mini tapes from answering machines or whatever. There's sort of an argument for a lot of that stuff, at least as it relates to your family and your loved ones and other people, because like my wife is undergoing this project right now where she's got all these old pictures and stuff of her family. And I think she's scanning them in, but it's like bringing her so much happiness and also bringing me a ton of happiness to just see pictures of people, you know, in her family at different ages and different events. And like, you know, both of her grandparents had passed away before I met her, but I've seen all these pictures of them and I have a sort of, I feel like I have a bit of a sense for them. It's like, there's a pretty compelling argument to be made for really holding on to, like, err on the side of holding on to too much stuff. As opposed to not enough.
Well, the fact that a lot of this stuff now can be digitized really helps because it doesn't have to literally clutter up your life. And I understand if you go overboard, you just have what, hard drives and hard drives and hard drives of minutia, which is also a great club song. I used to spin that in the basement. Mm-hmm. But I guess what, here, let me try to explain it this way too. Old photos from my youth and college days are popping up on Facebook every now and then, right? Somebody will be going through an old box of photos and they scan one in and it's look, we're all posing at this party, or maybe it's just a shot of us sitting around at a party. What usually fascinates me the most is not me or even the other people in the photo. It's like you look past the people and you remember, oh, that's right. Matt Zoll had that crazy game that always sat on the shelf or something like that. You just see these little things, and it's the objects that I see in the photos or the accidental videos that really take me back. And that's why this particular video really gets me, even though I didn't grow up with Fred Meyers. Just 26 or 28 minutes of unadulterated, just accidental tedium in an electronics store from the exact era that I was kind of coming of age and obsessing over electronics. There's something about this that just pushes all of my buttons. All right, I know you know about TBTL the podcast. You're listening to it right now, but have you tried TBTL the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
Well, What's in the old email bin today, my friend?
We have a lot of stuff. Let me start with the sour toad drink that we were talking about. The bar was in, do you say Yukon or the Yukon?
Oh, actually, you know what? I didn't ever note the specific location in Canada, so I guess you'd say the Yukon.
The Yukon. Well, Rob apparently was driving tour buses in the Yukon a while back. This is a listener, Rob, and he posted on Facebook that a friend of his and, let's see, he says, a friend of mine did a sour foot, five shots with five toes. He said that Rob also tried one, but his friend did five. He says it's a silly tourist thing. Rumor is that one of the toes was swallowed by accident, and the owner of the toe has no shortage of body parts soaking in alcohol from people who have accidents. So when he says the owner of the toe, I think he means the new owner of the toe, not the original.
The owner of the bar,
yes.
Who is now the owner of the toe.
It's a gently used toe.
Yes. What do you think, like, do you get free drinks for a week if you give them your own toe? Do you get a lifetime of free drinks? What is the, what's the pay for something like that?
My guess is you just get to tell people that you did the toe drink.
No, no, but I mean, if you give them your toe. If you have an unfortunate accident,
oh, right.
Or you have circulatory issues, or if for some reason you and your toe become disconnected, and then you're like, bag that up, EMT.
Right.
I've got a place to take that. And then you take it to the bar, and you're like, here, would you like this toe? Do you get a plaque like the one that I have at the Baranoff in Seattle? I had to pay $100 for that.
You should get something. If you could saved your $100 but cut off a toe, would you have made that trade instead?
No, absolutely not. Toes are so important for balance.
I agree.
I think people sleep on the idea of losing your big toe. Like, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. You'd be... That's trouble, man. I could lose one of the little ones. I would let one of my little toes go... Maybe not the baby toe, but the one next to it. That one seems fairly superfluous. I would let that one go... for $25,000.
$25,000? I would do that for $25,000 if the procedure was a medical procedure in the
right
way.
It was an amputation where you were like knocked out.
Yeah.
Would you go lower than $25,000?
As I say, you know who didn't have a big toe was my grandpa. Cut that guy off in a lawnmower accident.
Oh my
god. My understanding of it. Or he lost it some other way and just told us kids that. But I like to think.
Did he have
that
a pronounced limp from that?
No. But he was obviously an older man, and he was a very big man. So he, seeing him kind of get around, he was always kind of shuffling. But, I mean, he was pretty healthy until the end, too. I mean, he was still mowing the lawn. I can still picture him mowing on the lawn. Didn't stop him from.
I was going to say, you wouldn't get on a plane after you saw a video of somebody else on a shaky plane. This guy cut his damn toe off. He's out there next week mowing the lawn again.
Yeah, he
can't keep that guy down.
He spray painted flames on the side of it and called it toe cutter. That's not true. you were asking me, though, would I go lower? So not pinky toe, but the next one in. I think that's smart, by the way. 100%
I feel like you need
that.
The edges.
Yep. I agree. I would do it for... I would do it for less.
Like how much less?
Depending on the circumstances, I might do it for 10.
Really? I guess if you really needed 10,000.
I mean, the way I'm living my life, I figure I'm probably not dying with all my toes the way it is anyway. might as well cash some of them out.
That's actually a good point. You want to coast in on fumes, toe-wise.
You don't want to
just be looking down at five beautiful, or I should say 10 beautiful toes as you're reaching the end of your time on this planet. You want to look down and know that you got your money's worth on those toes.
What's the famous expression? The man who dies with 10 toes never lived at all. Is that what the expression is?
That is exactly the expression.
I thought so. Do you want to do one more? How are we on time?
Yeah.
I have a voicemail
here.
We're good. It's a bit of a story. So, buckle up here. We were talking about those Ghost Finder apps or Ghost Radar apps. I tried downloading them. I was playing around with them a while back. They came up on the show again the other day. One thing that I didn't mention, or at least recently, is aside from supposedly telling you whether or not there are ghosts in the room, it also generates, or maybe listens to the other side, and shows you words, just kind of random words that kind of pop up on the screen. And those are supposed to be kind of coming from the other side, right? Well, listener Kelly in Andrew, Florida, left us this voicemail.
Hey, Luke and Andrew, this is Kelly from Orlando. I just wanted to call in. I heard Andrew talking about his favorite ghost hunting app, the Ghost Radar, the other day, and I wanted to share a kind of spooky experience related to that app. So back when Andrew talked about it a few months ago, I guess I downloaded it that day, and I was just kind of curious playing around with it. And, of course, you know, it started off by saying a bunch of nonsense words, you know, pencil, globe, what have you. So are you just looking around my room? I thought it was kind of silly. So that night I went out to dinner with my boyfriend, and we were sitting there, and I was showing him the app and, you know, just kind of playing around with it. And the waiter comes over and is just kind of curious about it, and he wanted me to explain it, so I kind of went through what it was. And I said, yeah, I think it's kind of BS because the only thing that it's been saying is David. It just, you know, it said David, and that was the only thing that it said. And the waiter looks at me, and he just goes white as a sheet. And he said, what did you say? And I said, David. And he said, wait here. And he runs in the back, and he gets a bunch of other employees from the restaurant, and they come out, and he says, tell them what you just told me. And I said, well, you know, and I kind of explained it again, and I said, yeah, the only thing it's been saying is David. And all the employees, they looked equally as just horrified, and I said, what's going on? And they said,
unfortunately, the voicemail just cuts off there.
Yeah.
So I don't know. No, okay.
Well, it was a pretty good
story though, right? Setup.
I guess it's kind of cool. So you get to write your own end to the story.
All right, sorry. Here we go.
And I said, "What's going on?" And they said, "No joke. David was an employee here at the restaurant for about 10 years, and almost 1 year ago to the day, he passed away from cancer." And I was like, you guys are pulling my leg. You know, I thought this was a big joke. And each one of them swore up and down, this is 100% true. And I, you know, I thought they were pulling my leg, but just the look on their faces let me know that this was apparently what happened. And maybe the Ghost Radar app, maybe it knew something I didn't. I don't know. Kind of spooky, though. Anyway, power out.
That was the most resigned power out. The most kind of embarrassed power out. I love that voicemail, and I want people to leave us more voicemails like that. But it doesn't really change how I feel about ghosts or ghost tracking. I mean, David's a very common name. It was almost 1 year to the day. I'm not convinced.
Well, yeah, I don't want to rain on anyone's parade. And I'll tell you, if I were in that situation, I would be like, wow, that's really eerie. So I get that feeling. I get having that feeling. I think that's what my response would be.
Yeah, well,
but,
Sorry.
No, go for it.
I was just going to say, but because I don't want to just like kind of poop on this ghost story. What I realized in listening to Kelly's story is, even though I completely don't believe in ghosts, and I still don't believe there's any ghost story anybody can tell me that would have me think otherwise, I still love them. Like, I was on the edge of my seat to hear where Kelly's story was going to go the whole time. I love the rhythm and just kind of the pacing people automatically slip into when they're telling a story like this. I think just subconsciously, I will listen to everybody's ghost. Well, I'm also the dream guy. I also like listening to people's dreams. So send me your ghost stories and your dreams, and I'll listen to them, even if I don't believe in either one.
I think what happens in these kinds of scenarios, though, because it's like when people will talk about how they went and got a reading and it was just crazy, like all the things the person knew. I think that what we tend to do is we tend to dismiss the stuff that doesn't match up. And then, so if there's 15 things suggested and 14 of them don't match up or don't connect up with anything, but then one does, we very quickly forget about the 14 that didn't mean anything. And the one that did mean something, which, you know, random probability says something will, you know, did you have someone in your family pass away? It was, you were very sad when and it's like, well, most people would answer yes to a question like that. You know, like I'm talking about more like what a psychic might do. And so I think there's probably a bunch of things that the Ghost Hunter app was doing that were not really, I don't know, sort of paranormal, if you will. But then this name David was hit upon, and it is a weird coincidence. That's a very weird coincidence. Mm-hmm.
I remember being young and somebody talking about, going to see a fortune teller. That's not the right word. What's the word? Medium. Yeah. Somebody going to see a medium or something like whatever. Yeah. And they were recounting somewhat eye-rollingly their friend's experience, and their friend was just buying it hook, line, and sinker. But the person telling the story had been there, and it's like, you know, this medium is saying things like, you know, there's a man in your life who wears boots for a living. And I just always remember that example because the person telling the story, I have no idea who this adult was as a kid at the time, was like, everybody has somebody in their life who has to wear boots for a living, right? Like, you just find those common things. Do you know anybody in your life, Luke, who wears boots for a living?
Couldn't think of one person.
Wait, what about that boot model friend of yours?
Oh, Ricky? Yeah, okay, yeah. So one. So, okay. One okay, person, see, everybody's, Ricky, the boot model.
Everybody's got one. I did realize at one point I was saying wear boots for a living. That's not exactly what they were saying. Wear boots for their occupation.
It's crazy because it was almost exactly 2 years and 4 days ago that Ricky tried to come to a party at my house long after the party was over, and I hid from him.
Uh-huh.
I heard his boots as he came up the steps.
I have an app that just generates the word hot dog over and over and over again. I find it calming.
I bet you do. Speaking of which, I got some show titles.
Great.
Today. I've got Secret Sausages.
Mm.
Honey Tummy.
Which we didn't actually say, right?
No, but I just thought...
No, I like it.
I mean,
like it.
Honey Stomach versus... Don't you think Honey Tummy is... that's the natural conclusion of that. Hard Drives of Minutia. Mm-hmm. Accidental Tedium. And then maybe my favorite, Studio 57.
I also wrote down Accidental Tedium. I also wrote down When the Smoke Gets in Your Zyes. And what I like about that is you have to, if you're going with the name of the product, you have to spell it XYZ. So it really makes no sense until you hear the show. Also,
makes no sense.
Also, Southbound End of a Northbound B.
I like Smoke Gets in Your Zyes.
So do I. I think that's pretty solid. Congratulations, us.
Yay,
us. People don't celebrate us enough, you know?
No, and it's about time that changed. I was kind of, it's a little on the nose because there is, you know, Smoke Gets in Your Eyes is a beautiful song.
Oh, yeah. We could do that.
I don't know. Is that a little on the nose?
Well, is there a version that is maybe, who did the very original?
Well, I have a Jerry Garcia Band version, if that's what you're asking.
We also could do, let's see. no, I'm not saying no, but I think we've done, there's this this band called The Bees. They have a song called Imaginary Girl. I think you'll like it. It sounds a little bit like, I don't know, maybe The Shins or something. The Bird and the Bee is a band.
Well, let's hear this Bees. You've played this band Bees before, and I like them.
Yeah, I think actually this might be a different one. There's something, I won't go into detail because it'll be boring, and I don't know all the details right now. This is a different band, though. This is like the U.S. band that goes by the name The Bees, and there's another one that had to change their name from a different country. Anyway, I don't know if you've ever heard this one before, but I'll play it for you. It's called Imaginary Girl.
All right, Imaginary Girl by The Bees. Thanks for listening to the podcast today, everybody. We will be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, enjoy your Monday, and please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Imaginary girl, this is a song for you. Sorry it took forever. I know it's really nothing. It was the least I could do. Better late than never. I was stranded in the middle of the night. I was washed out to sea. Out of the water, you appeared like a dream to me. Imaginary girl, you blow my mind. You got to be joking. I'm a dreamer, but I could do it full time. If the position was open, things have changed since you came my way. You gave me something to live for. Dark in the night and brighten up my day. Yeah. is a song for you. Be mine forever. I really need to know if you feel this too. It's gotta be now or never. Got to be now or never. It's gotta be now or never. Imaginary girls is a song for you.
Power out.